Welcome back to the Gaming Tailgate Podcast, our special Halloween edition. First off, let's introduce the co-host. His luggage is Samsonite. It's Tommy. Tommy, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. Just kind of taking it all in.
And our second co-host, he likes to talk about his baggage when he meets new people, but he never says what brand it is. It's JB Huskers. JB, how are you?
What's up, Coach Prime? How you handling the losing?
Well, he's Neon Dion. So like, I'm going to be LED CDJ tonight, but then maybe just CJ since there's no D out in Colorado. In this episode, we're going to talk about really focusing on Matt Brown's interview with YouTuber Tubby Light. He had a 50-minute interview. I recommend people check out on YouTube at his account at TubbyLight2. It's a 50-minute interview. Matt Brown goes over a lot of the things that he kind of has learned through Freedom of Information Act requests. Learning lots of game information, whether EA wants it out or not, Matt Brown is sure finding it out and sharing it slowly. He did state in this interview that there are things he knows he's holding back, which I think is a good, which is positive, because not everything needs to be revealed early. Do you guys agree or disagree? I know as fans, we want to know everything, but less than a year from release, let's hold off on some of this stuff.
Yeah, I'm curious if he's holding it back because NDA or because he's waiting on EA to kind of tease it and then he, you know, go with the full details or what the case may be. But I'm also of the mind, like you kind of said, you know, don't ruin the game for everyone else. Just kind of, you know, release some teasing information and then let EA do the full marketing on their own.
Yeah. Is he waiting for the book to come out or what's he waiting on here?
I get the impression from the interview, he said that he's not under NDA and it's weird. He says that he gets the impression EA is not real thorough with him leaking this stuff, but he is also getting clarification on some items from EA communications and developers. So I think he's just being polite and not going to reveal the whole thing for them, because that would really undercut the whole product.
That, or it could be, you know, that it's news, but it's not like earth shattering news. So again, he can kind of keep the conversation going, you know, on his own as he releases, you know, things here and there or whatever.
Could be subject to change too. You never know what could be changed between now and then. Still, you know, some time before even the main, you know, even EA put stuff out. So you never know what, how old things are and, or how, like, you know, how, you know, whatever his source is, are they keeping them up to date on a daily basis? Or is this, you know, how old is this news? You know, so it's a lot of variables there to probably be better be safe on.
Well, in this show, we're going to focus on some of the highlights of the interview. Again, I would recommend people go to YouTube, check out the full 50-minute interview. We're just going to go through about five or six highlights that I think are worth bringing out to the community's attention. First off, this is not the first time that Matt has mentioned the two words college game day. In this interview, he mentions that Reese Davis, Kirk Kerschen, Desmond Howard have already, and others have already recorded commentary. That kind of takes us back. If we go to November of last year,
can you see it through those glasses?
I've noticed you in the reflection. You guys can see like every screen I'm looking at is November of last year. Matt was on location for Montana versus Montana State, where game day was. I had forgotten some of these details until I looked at the article last night. Matt Brown visited with some of the ESPN staffers, and David Pollack, who is now gone from ESPN, confirmed that he will be providing voice talent for next year's EA Sports College Football. Reese Davis told us he's played as Montana a few times in the old games. When Brown asked if it would be in the next one, he smiled, said he isn't sure how he's allowed to answer, but he's going to be real busy on Monday. Community member Nate at the time, at Oklahoma's Pod, said, "We're getting game day in the game, aren't we?" And Brown responded with just a smiling emoji. So you factor that in, along with what we've learned in this recent interview with Tubby Light, it seems like Matt is trying to say everything but put out a big headline saying game day is going to be in the game in some form or fashion. Does that shock you guys? To me, that seemed like that was always the biggest community thing from casual and hardcores that we never got on last gen on the PS3 or 360.
It'll be interesting what they put in there. Is it just going to be a you know, course of putting on the headgear, or, you know, is it going to be in depth? Is it going to, you know, obviously we're a lot more advanced than we were on the last football game. So now they can maybe even, you know, piece together information from stats and what's happened in the past and maybe put together a little studio show. It's hard to tell, but I guarantee it's probably going to be mostly centered around Corso and the headgear.
He said in the interview that Corso is not on one of the names that he's seen for anything recorded. Now, that does not mean they're not going to scan him in or have somebody wearing a headset, but as of now, it does not seem that Corso is lined up for this.
Now, what do they do with David Pollock now that he's not there anymore?
I'm guessing somebody else inherited his line. Desmond Howard.
Yeah, they'll fund somebody else. To me, I mean, maybe I'm in the minority, but just in general, College game day, I'm getting kind of a little bit tired of. So putting it in the game isn't like a huge revelation to me. I'll be curious to see how they implement it. And, you know, maybe it's something that ties in and gives you something to enjoy. But I think beyond like a quick 30-second clip going, you know, around the table or something like that, like who's going to win the game kind of thing. Honestly, beyond that, I don't see the appeal of it personally. I mean, I'm always the guy that fast forward, take me to the game, let me get in, you know, get in and start calling plays.
Unless this is part of the pregame in terms of where you think in the past you had either load screens or, you know, the stadium pans and the montage video like in 14. What if this replaces it or only shows up for the big games? Because I agree with you. If this is some big long thing or not enough variety, it's going to get skipped a lot. But at the same time,
didn't they used to have something? It was just like text though or something that where they some people made their picks.
Yeah, in the team previews. In the team previews, you could click and see like the comparison of the stats, and on the left side, it would have a avatar or the picture basically of Corso and a picture of Herb Street, and they would go next to the team they picked. So, I mean, we kind of had it in a way, but nothing extravagant or formal.
Presentation around it or anything like that.
It was back to PS2 when you had the Corso putting on the headset.
Yeah, and to your point, you would almost have to do it just on the game of the week or something like that. Don't do it for every game or anything like that. I mean, make it feel special, make it feel like you've earned it somehow or something.
Brown also went on to say that even the schools that have not signed on yet are still submitting assets. He has been very adamant on Twitter that he believes every school will be in the game when it comes out. And he kind of furthers that point in this interview, saying that even the schools that have been slow to sign on, and names a couple private schools such as Notre Dame and Tulane, he believes have not signed on yet, have been submitting assets. So I think that's a good sign for anybody worried about their school not being in the game. It sounds like they will be, at least at this juncture.
So I'm curious what they do for those two. Do they leave them out entirely, or do they do New Orleans and South Bend, or, you know, how do they decide to do that if, let's say, day one they're not signed on, but then, you know, 30 days later they decide to sign up or something like that? I'd be curious how they handle if they leave them out or how they want to do it. But I assume at the end they'll be in the game.
I assume they probably put them in the game, but like, you know how you have your multiple uniform options, and then they just kind of remove those options and they probably have a generic backup plan probably. They just put it all into one, and then whichever way it goes, if they sign on, delete the generic packages off of the uniform choices. If they don't sign on, then you delete the actual assets that they got.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to randomize the uniforms and stuff like that. You couldn't have the gold helmets and stuff, you know. So again, at the end of the day, I think they'll be in the game. I don't think I'm really worried about that, but I'd be curious to see what EA's backup plans are.
Yeah, I wonder what's holding it up if they're sending assets but yet not officially signing on to the game.
I think they're just waiting to see how they treat the players and you know, how many do the players actually sign up, or do they go with generics, or what they end up doing. That's just a guess, but
I think when push comes to shove, they'll join in. And who knows, maybe them dragging their feet, maybe they'll get a little extra later on out of the deal. Brown does go on to something interesting. Players from the service academies may find themselves unable to be in the game due to NIL restrictions in regards to their government status. Basically, they're employees of the government. So at this point, it's unknown. Yeah, the teams might be in there, but the players may not be able to be in there. So you'll could have actual Air Force, for example, and completely randomized and generic players. It's one of those that...
Is it restrictions like preventing them completely, or is it more limitations?
The way I understood it was NIL right now, since they're already employees of the government, there's probably rules or restrictions in place. Can they sign this other contract, which basically was NIL? Can they do that? And as of the time, right now, it sounds like no. But Brown did say he's trying to get an answer on it. And right now, the answer he gets from the government, the schools he's contacting, is we don't know, which is always encouraging.
I would think that they figure out a way to get it in, only because like there's been times in the past that a player that is NFL caliber gets to go to the NFL instead of going and serving their duty. You know, they kind of consider that a marketing opportunity. So, you know, maybe they see it the same way, that that this is a marketing opportunity for Army and Navy and Air Force. And so let's, you know, see if we can figure out a way to get our players in.
Brown also mentions the Ultimate Team will include historic players like NCAA Football 14. I think that's a huge surprise. He goes on to talk about how they'll probably go ahead and license individual players like NCAA Football 14 did. Again, not a huge shock, but it's one of those that I think everybody's worried about it being in the game, but I think it's going to be very much like 14.
Yeah, I think so too. You'll have current NFL players because I'm sure they'll use the NFLPA license. Right. And then after that, like you said, they'll have like, you know, historical players like Barry Sanders or whatever. Just like it's probably under an umbrella agreement, just like they have for Madden Ultimate Team. They just say, hey, we're going to include you in Madden and college football this time.
And we probably talked about this before, but it's probably also a good way for those bigger stars to make more money by maybe being included in this into the Ultimate Team if they're looking to add NIL players into it, possibly. You know, that could be a way to satisfy those stars, especially if they're not playing ball or want more money. Maybe this is the way that you can get those guys on board, at least for the base game, and then put them into Ultimate Team.
Well, and the thing is correct me if I'm wrong, but right now they're, you know, at least Brown's not talking about that current players are going to be included in Ultimate Team. Now, I fully expect that they will try to work them in somehow, but
at least some of the big stars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It'll be curious to see how they do that. Do they go, you know, all of the starters across the board, or do they just go with like the players of the week or something like that?
And now, we've kind of had some time pass. Now the season's gotten, you know, a few games into the season. Now, do you expect like a Caleb Williams to be like the front runner to be like the cover athlete now, or do you see anybody else that might be jumping up there with their performances so far this year?
I think it depends on how it plays out the rest of the year. I mean, I think it's easy to say Williams is the leader, but I think we got to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, I've always said that if the Heisman winner is an underclassman and he's coming back, then he'll be the cover athlete and he'll be the face of the game, basically, in my opinion. Obviously, they'll still market, you know, Caleb Williams and Drake May and everyone like that. But at the same time, the face of the franchise will be the best returning player, I think.
Brown also mentions that from what he's learned, that EA has looked into, maybe inquired about getting some licensed songs. And the example that Brown gives, so I'm going to take it as he's seen this specifically, Enter Sandman from Metallica for Virginia Tech. He mentions, and I don't know if this was an exact cost or if he was just saying a $500,000 price tag.
That sounds right.
Which that's what I thought as well, which it's one of those that I think it's great EA wants to do it. I just can't see when push comes to shove that they would do that. And if they do get this song, prepare for that to be in every trailer and every video and the opening video of this game. Yeah. You're not going to just hear it at one stadium. It's going to be a background at every stadium, but obviously the intro for Virginia Tech.
Yeah. Bands like Metallica. Bands like Metallica and AC/DC, you're looking at six figures easy for licensing and things like that.
If they do that, though, I couldn't see them paying $500,000 for a single year. That would surely have to be a perpetual license or something to where they get their money's worth out of it for 10 years or something. Because otherwise, to me, that's pointless. I mean, yeah, it's obviously it's going to come into marketing and probably be on some of the menus. But if you never play Virginia Tech, you're never going to hear the song on the field. So,
right.
You know, it's to me that's, you know, it's not worth $500,000 for it. It'd be great if you're in the ACC, but it's not if you're in the Pac-12 or something, or sorry, not Pac-12.
Rest in peace.
Yes.
Too soon.
Just get a dollar store band play a loose interpretation of those songs. You know,
that does kind of come up to a question though. If NIL has triggered, you know, the game getting sued and everything like that, what if they had stadium sounds? Is there going to be a concern about the game getting sued for those? So like they refused to pay Metallica money, but then stadium sounds comes in, so I added in. Now Metallica hears it in their game and they're going to start, you know, suing. You know, I can see Lars already, you know, starting to call the lawyers.
That was my
idea. Yeah, it's already drafted.
Could $500,000 pay for the development of the stadium sounds feature? But then I agree with you. How paranoid are they when it comes to creating kind of creation mode with licenses and creation mode? Is it maybe we don't get stadium sounds in the future? I mean, for the point you just mentioned.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that's, you know, yeah, I would say $500,000 could do the stadium sounds development alone. To me, that's, you know, pretty easy to do. But like you said, you know, it still leads to concerns about if you have it in the game, is somebody going to turn around and sue you over it?
Especially when you know it's going to get on YouTube. Somebody's going to make that and put it on Twitter or YouTube. We did that the first year of Stadium Sounds. We put out all the intros of the, you know, the schools we could find and the licensed songs, and they had a lot of views. I mean, they blew up. People love seeing that stuff. So, you know, first person who gets an early copy, if their Stadium Sounds puts that in for Virginia Tech, that thing's getting 5 to 6
but
number, you know,
nowadays YouTube is really strict on that stuff. Like any kind of music and videos.
Right.
Yeah. Cause like YouTube, you got to basically chop it down to a 3-second clip and then switch off of it in order to not get demonetized. Now they're really, and the same goes with video, just like showing any matching video of a copyrighted video is going to get flagged just with everything they do now. It's basically very strict on that stuff now. And you see like YouTubers, especially like pro wrestling YouTubers, what they'll do is just basically talk over it and then basically flip the scene every 2 to 3 seconds just to be able to keep that monetization.
I mean, to me, if they've opened the door to discussions with Metallica or anyone else like that, then that, if nothing else, that just gets the lawyer's ear even perked up even more.
Right. So now, they're on the radar.
Exactly.
But yeah. do you even see EA paying that much money just for a song for a school is the thing.
For though. FIFA, yeah. I could see them paying for a licensed song with that much money. For NCAA football in the past or college football next year, I would be surprised. The license fee enough is going to be massive for all these schools, players, extra players. If you get Legends and Ultimate Team, that there's a ton of money being spent to get this game built.
Well, plus
is having that song in the game going to sell, you know, enough extra copies to even break even? You know, if you're a Virginia Tech fan, sure, you may go out and buy it because it's in the game. But outside of that, is it going to draw up that many that many more sales?
Well, on top of that, you see EA brought back the golf franchise. They brought back Augusta for the very first time in, you know, roughly 10 years, and that thing it didn't really sell that well, you know. So you can't, this is something that you can't even do in the first game, I don't think, until you see how it sells comparatively to to Madden and FIFA and things like that. Because you know, you're already seeing the golf game on sale for $10 at GameStop. Of course, GameStop's kind of doing a fire sale, but almost you're going to see a fire sale from every store because, you know, like a couple of the major retailers have already said they're doing away with physical media in 2024, which is just around the corner. So that's probably, I think GameStop's probably the first to get onto the fire sale and you see all these games for cheap. But at the same time, there really hasn't been much of a buzz since launch on that game, even though it included Augusta. And so I don't know if EA is considering that to be a hit or not. So then, you know, bringing back another franchise that hasn't been around for a while, you got to wonder, you know, how much they're going to kind of be cautious with the first release of what to add and what not to add and what to spend, just because you don't know. You know, we assume that there's going to be a big demand for it, but you don't know, you know. And so that's the thing, is it's a big unknown. So that's why I just don't see EA spending $500,000 for a song for a team out of 130 teams.
Yeah, agreed.
Part of it's a marketing, would be a marketing point. But that, to your point,
yeah, I mean, if you put it in money, commercials,
right? Yeah. Your point about spending money, Matt Brown also brought up, there was a question from Tubby Light asking about coaches. Would licensed coaches, real coaches, be in the game? And it sounded like from Brown, coaches are unlikely to be in because EA has a fear if you add in, let's say you add in 100 coaches, how many of those coaches are going to get fired mid-year, end of year, maybe not worth the investment. So I completely get their point. But I would counter with, aren't there a handful of elite coaches, big name coaches, you know, are safe and you know that nationally have an appeal factor to the casual fan? One might be Deion Sanders. I think everybody knows who Nick Saban is. Kirby Smart, yeah. Dabo. I think there's a handful of guys that you at least kick the tires on. I mean, if they want too much money, then you don't do it. I get it completely. But if you can get some of those big name ones for cheap, I'm not sure why you wouldn't. At least look into it.
there's no association, so there's no easy blanket way to do it and right. put everybody in minus Bill Belichick. So, you know, there's nothing like that in college. And so what happens with those coaches if they get let go, you know, it's like.
Well, and it's kinda... the problem with college football is it's not just let go. It's also if they get, you know, a job in the NFL or you know, take an OC job, go from Kent State to go to, you know, Colorado or something like that. You know, there's a lot of different scenarios that can happen in college football and 130 coaches. I mean, I would say that some coaches would definitely see it as a marketing opportunity to say, hey, did you catch me out in the, you know, new college football game, you know,
like Dion
for, yeah, exactly. For you know, a recruit. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I could see some benefit for it. You know, this Nick Saban, he doesn't care, you know, he's probably going to go the Bill Belichick route, but at the same time, if you could do it, I think it's still worth it. And then just, you know, it's an annual contract. So if they get fired, you know, halfway through, then so be it.
Nobody's going to hold it against EA. That's the part that I, you know, nobody's going to say, oh, I can't believe EA added this coach who got fired midseason. Nobody's going to hold that against him. No, nobody. I mean, people can find any reason to criticize EA or make up legit or otherwise. That's not one. So that's one that doesn't completely hold water. I see their point. I just don't completely agree with it.
It's also maybe on the other point of we're spending this money. And then if this happens, are we spending the money for nothing on a game that we're trying to or we're kind of gambling on that we've already spent enough money on and we're kind of gambling it's going to sell, you know, and if you can maybe do if they do with Road to Glory, if they do story driven things, you could, I guess, choose between 5 to 6 schools and have those coaches in the game and have them in that mode maybe. And then, and then possibly in the game, but you know, maybe just on a limited basis to start.
That was kind of the mindset I had, but if the rule about the coaches getting fired, well, when you have 15,000 players, there's going to be some guy next year who do something extremely stupid after the game comes out that they're going to have to either remove because he's no longer on scholarship or commits a crime and is no longer on there. So for fear of that kind of thing, they're going to have with the players. So, I mean, I understand they want to keep costs down, but I'm saying if that was no obstacle, they're going to have the same obstacle same problem with the players. They're going to do things they have to get removed for. JB, you mentioned it's kind of a risk trying to figure out how would this game sell. Matt Brown also added that this game is not expected to surpass 25% of Madden sales. I tried to look to find their sale numbers, and it's always so tricky because we'll get press releases from EA talking about the first week sales or the digital sales have increased. It's very difficult to get a, you know, 1 year straight up. How many copies did you sell? Off the top of my head, I want to think the number comes to mind is around 10 million. And I may be wrong on that, so don't quote me, anybody, please. But so if you take that 25%, that would mean if they sold 10 million copies of Madden a year, they expect college football to sell about 2.5 million. Is that more or less than what you guys thought or about where you thought?
I think was that's it before? More than when we left off with like 13 and 14, at least within the initial year. I mean, obviously 14's had an extra life to it, but you know, I was thinking that sales were usually between 1 million and 2 million or something like that. And you know, that was kind of almost in its heyday. Now, obviously, way back in the day, you know, NCAA 04 or something like that, then, yeah, I could see, you know, 4 million, something like that. But 13, 14, I was guessing between 1 and 2.
Yeah, back then, I mean, what did Madden sell back then even? I mean, were they higher than 10 million, you know, the other iterations?
I don't think they ever were too public with that information. I mean, there were sites like VGCharts.com used to give numbers, but then people always questioned how legit those were. My argument was,
well, then digital took over. Yeah, right, digital took over, digital. And that kind of screwed there. Yeah, digital took over, and that kind of screwed up VG Charts' numbers. So
no, I don't know. I want to think the number I've heard is 10 million, give or take. But then, like I said, EA will put out things about how, you know, they have the best week launch in sales, the best digital year or first week digital sales. You never get that full for 1 year. We sold this. I believe Andrew Wilson in one of the investor calls gave a number. When I looked for it last night, I could not find it. It was difficult. Didn't come up in any searches. So maybe I misheard it. Maybe it was a Mandela effect. I could not find it when I looked for it last night.
Well, I always wondered. I always thought NCAA sold a lot better back in the day, but like closer. I thought maybe it was closer to 50% than 25 back in the day. But
I've never thought it was that high. Not 50% at least. Again, totally guessing, but, you know, I always thought, you know, 25 to 33% thereabouts. Just, you know, Madden's so huge. And if you talk to somebody about Madden, you know, if you talk to anyone who's not even a gamer, they know about Madden football, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you then mention that, oh, hey, by the way, there's a college football game, they're going to say, oh, there is? Why do you need two? You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to me, Madden's huge. So even just 25%, I think, is a successful thing. And they're never going to exceed, you know, they're never going to get approach Madden's numbers. So, no. You know, just you're almost doing it as a fan service, but at the same time, they're obviously still going to make plenty of money off of that as well. So,
well, that's going to wrap up our recap of Matt Brown's interview with Tubby Light on YouTube. We recommend you go check that out. We will put that in the comments on YouTube. Our numbers on our podcast have been great. So we appreciate everyone who's left a review, everyone who's subscribed. In the meantime, we recommend you go to YouTube, leave us a like and subscribe. We could use the boost in numbers there. We appreciate all the sharing we can get. For Tommy and Jeremy, I am CDJ, and we'll see you on the next edition of the Gaming Tailgate Podcast.